Mr. Brown, what are you doing on here? I don't know if Brianna, one of my Sweet Potato Project teens, was really all that surprised to see me step on Metro Bus Number 74. We both lived near O'Fallon Park, and on many a day this summer, I drove Brianna or her classmates to or from class. All 25 youth enrolled this year knows Mr. Brown drives an unpredictable hoopty. They also know I live right across the street from the vacant lot in the 21st Ward where we are growing our sweet potatoes. I've been very honest with them about our struggles to raise funds for the program and their salaries. If the money's not there, I tell them, we have to get creative to make it work. In other words, the youth know that I'm an ordinary guy who's trying to empower them to do something extraordinary in their neighborhoods. Personally, I think it's important that they know that someone who looks like them, lives where they live, and faces the challenges that they face, still has the power to make a difference. So you might ask, what can a guy who drives a crappy car and rides the bus teach kids about entrepreneurism? My answer is threefold. First, I've lived long enough to know that my current situation doesn't define me. I've been to the top of my professional career here in St. Louis. I've had all the limelight and stature, but I still felt a huge void in my life. Today I live a more challenging and much more richer life. Secondly, I'm not the only influence in these kids' lives. The North Area Community Development Corporation, which operates the Sweet Potato Project, we've brought all sorts of successful entrepreneurs and professionals to class to share their stories, their advice, and expertise with our kids. And lastly, I maintain that part of being an entrepreneur is having the determination, the grit to outlast the hardships and to creatively use whatever talent, skill, or gift we have to beat back the obstacles and make our own way. The Sweet Potato Project, in a very real sense, is an entrepreneurial endeavor. And I've told the teens that they are just as responsible as the adults in ensuring its success, not just for them, but for their siblings and the next generation. I tell them with all sincerity that they are urban pioneers, charged with creating future opportunities and jobs for others in North St. Louis by planting produce and proving that we can turn our yields into marketable products. The students have shown me that they get it, and they actually appreciate that I think that they can make a difference. For instance, last year, 2012, we actually ran out of money before the summer session ended. And I will never forget, it was a Friday. I explained to the 15 kids we had at that time that we could no longer pay them their biweekly stipends. And we'd have no hard feelings if they chose not to show up the next week. On Monday, I was the first to arrive. Not a single student was there. I was heartbroken. And at 9 a.m., 9 a.m. on the dot, one student walked around the corner, then two, then another, and another. By 9:15, all 15 kids showed up. And the beautiful thing is, they showed up with ideas. Mr. Brown, let's have a car wash to raise some money. Mr. Brown, let's do a dance. Mr. Brown, let's do a skate party. On and on they went. Priceless. This, I believe, is part of what makes our program so unique. It's geared to motivate and inspire those young people, most from the poorest zip codes in our city. They've been stereotyped. They've been dismissed. They've been discarded. They are their neighborhoods have been written off, considered lost causes. I know that even if they're not involved in the illegal drug trade, our kids are sadly aware of its existence in their neighborhoods. They know that it's a sure way that some folk make money. We challenge the media's glorification of the gangster lifestyle by stressing there's legal opportunity right outside your door. But we tell them that they must tap into the hidden and unexplored potential that they have inside and that's outside in the hood. See, we've got to stop underestimating these kids. They can quickly assess who's for real and who's talking down to them. We may be well-intentioned as hell, But when we solely focus on the negativities of their peers or the poor neighborhoods, we're actually putting down their parents. We're putting down their siblings, their friends, and places that they live, that they laugh, that they play, that they struggle, and places where they find comfort. A few of my kids have a hard edge, and I know why. At young ages, some of them have lived lives that make my childhood look like recess in Ladue. Let me give you a couple examples. Once I had given Darian, 19, a ride home. As I approached his duplex off Grand near the big white water tower, I noticed a detached bumper, broken glass, and car parts all over the street in front of this dented light post. "Oh man, somebody had an accident in front of your house," I said. "Oh no, Mr. Brown," Darian said. He was disturbingly nonchalant when he said it. "They were shooting last night, and somebody got shot and hit the pole." One of my students, Frederick, lost his brother to violence during our summer session this year, as did Charnel, who told us her brother was brutally assassinated gangland style 2 years ago. Another student, Nadia, said she saw folks shot near her front lawn in North St. Louis. See, we work to get our youth to see the economic opportunity within the chaos. We try to get them to realize that they are best suited to capitalize on these opportunities. Our first mandate is to have them read the news and start the day with a conversation about local or world events and activities. And it's interesting how most want to talk about ghastly crimes, about shootings, about murders, or what's going on with rappers, sports figures, or celebrities. I push them to go deeper. Tell me what disciplines it took to make that rapper or that sports figure successful. I ask that they read about new social media, about gaming or electronic technologies, and how they can make their life better. If they want to talk about shootings, I urge them to explore the socioeconomic factors in particular neighborhoods that breed crime, hopelessness, and violence, and come up with solutions. Unless you point it out, our youth have no idea how they already influence the world. It's their music, their gestures, their slang and clothing styles that's been greedily co-opted by mainstream society. You can't even go to a football game or a baseball game without hearing hip-hop music. Our kids, no matter how poor, they manage to find great deals and bargains. They manage to stay sharp with coordinating tennis shoes, shirts, skirts, hairdos, and much more. I remember a class assignment we had early this summer. I asked them to develop their own media campaigns. Within 2 hours, these kids came up with product ideas that can make billionaires like Russell Simmons or Jay-Z even more billions. We happened to have a chemist in class when one of the youth teams detailed their idea for eye and hair color changing candy. The chemist was blown away. He told the kids that he has a colleague that's currently working on a variation of such a product. This, my friends, is a sort of genius that's walking our streets, filling our classrooms, and being mostly ignored or unnoticed. And again, I know why. Our kids have a lot of stuff that they bring to overcrowded and underfunded classrooms. These distractions keep them from making real-world connections between what's being taught in class and what they can apply in their own worlds, in their own neighborhoods. Unfortunately, many who see no urban application tune out at early ages. The 25 kids I had this summer sent me home sometimes with no voice from yelling, no energy from dealing with their issues, and no idea how to inspire or keep them engaged and motivated. But then, the next day or the next week, they'd arouse my hopes. Each kid had a journal. As I read their reflections, I was uplifted by the little things. A speaker who visited us, an entrepreneur's visit, a group discussion, a business visit, or something else that really made them stop and think. There was that first day of class when I heard one of my young men, a former gangbanger, I heard him say he quit the gang after his little daughter was born. This youth turned in a passionate essay about senseless deaths in his community and how he wanted to play a role in ending it. Among their other talents, Charnel is a gifted poet, Miramani is an illustrator. Frederick is a wannabe comedian. Keandra is a tenacious cook. Barry and Mike, my two strong, dependable leaders, they can produce their own music. Xavier, he's a mischievous kid, but he happens to speak German. Michael is an all-around scholar and athlete. Jason, Janetta, and Darian, I have two Darians, have amazing work ethics. Charles, Andevar, and Nadia are smooth, too smooth to be honest, but they have that unique and magnetic gift of gab. They can pull people in. Alicia, Brianna, and Janae, these are just three of the headstrong women I had in class who demonstrated the ability and discipline to plan and execute events. Keon, Raheem, Martez, Paul, Darian, and Keith, they're all jocks. They're great at basketball. And they can be quickly distracted. But with direction, they show me that they can indeed step up and become valuable team players, our go-to workers. You see, what I love about this grassroots effort, this Sweet Potato Project, is that the youth are designing the program. I interviewed the 2012 class last year, and they helped me tweak what we were doing. Some of our kids, they walk from all over town, from downtown, from midtown, all the way up to the Penrose neighborhood where we held classes at the St. Louis Catholic Academy. The last thing they wanted to do was sit through long lectures when they arrived. So we worked to build in self-esteem boosting, get out of your shell, conflict resolution exercises and activities, and we took them on as many on-site business visits as possible. We walked blocks in the Central West End and North St. Louis neighborhood. I had them write down and reflect on the different types of businesses, services, and billboards they saw in each area. The idea was to get the teens thinking about commerce, advertising, supply and demand, and ways that they could implement what they admired in high-income neighborhoods in their own low-income communities. The point is, for 9 weeks, these young people had their worth validated. And don't get me wrong, we didn't change the trajectory of their lives in less than 3 months. We just planted a seed. We allowed them to dream from where they are, not from where we hope they will be 4 or 8 years from now. Earlier this year, I told the board of the North Area Community Development Corporation that I had serious doubts about starting the program this year. With no startup funds, I just couldn't see how I was supposed to rebuild my own career while raising money to operate the program. Then the kids started calling me. Mr. Brown, when are we going to start again? Mr. Brown, I got my friends who want to come to class this year. I committed. With the help of the Incarnate Word Foundation, with the help of Worldwide Technology and a few more generous donors, we raised almost $30,000. We were able to run the summer program and pay the kids their stipends. That's the wonderful part. The challenge now is raising more money for the rest of the year. A few of our students have enrolled in community college or four-year colleges. Others are back in high school, but there are about six of them who I consider on the cusp. No college, no job, prone to peer pressure. These kids have me extremely worried. I like to get them back working at least 2 or 3 days a week just to keep them engaged, just to keep their imaginations flickering, just to keep them out of trouble. We've had some very positive media this year, and I've been contacted by some promising funding sources for 2014. I've also made contact with some wonderful organizations such as Gateway Greening and the Catholic Campaign for Human Development and several corporations. Collaboration with these agencies and funding sources promises an even more structured and rewarding program next year. This year, we had friends of friends, young people who came to class, listened to speakers, and participated in our exercises without even getting paid. The Sweet Potato Project youth and their friends are actually showing me what they need to succeed. We are indeed onto something powerful here. So it's kind of scary, but I've made the commitment to stay focused mainly on raising the funds to finish out the year, to start weekend classes again very soon, to harvest the produce, to get products into distribution, to build the coalitions and partnerships that will help us create a programming structure that can motivate and educate the kids while addressing their many, many needs. So The means of transportation is not important. The kids know Mr. Brown is out there to change young lives and save communities. And more important, they know that we're on this ride together. Thank you very much. My name is Sylvester Brown. I am the program director for the Sweet Potato Project.